Talkline Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.
Welcome to the podcast.
And now,
you're listening to Talkline with Zev Brenner, America's premier Jewish broadcast on the air since 1981.
And now, here's your host.
But right now, Eliyahu Hawila, he is a Muslim. He masqueraded as a Jew, and we'll find out why, what it's all about. He married a Syrian Jewish girl, and the Tanon was in August. They got married a few weeks ago, and then they discovered that he wasn't Jewish, and that led to the story where we had NYPD Richard Taylor, who said that the police department and the FBI vetted him. They found that there was no terrorist connection, but yet there's still some ruffled feathers in the community, and he's here to tell his story as well. So, Eliyahu Hawila, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Zev.
So, tell us, so you were born in Lebanon, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And this is a different name that you had when you lived in that country. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, I believe you had a name, Ali Hassan. So, growing up, did you...
Hassan was my middle name.
Was your middle name. Okay. Now, you grew up, you were a Shiite, were you a religious Muslim? What was your family like in Lebanon?
So, I grew up, I was born to parents who were born to Muslim Shia families, but personally, just me, I never affiliated with the religion of Islam. I never been a practicing Muslim. I don't believe in Islam. So when you refer to me as a Muslim, that's not actually who I am. I don't identify as it. I was born to Muslim parents, non-practicing. Dad only prays, fasts, but my mother does not practice Islam. She does not practice any religion. She's religiousless. I wouldn't say an atheist, but I would say, you know, close to it. But I am not a practicing Muslim. I don't believe in Islam, and it's not my religion.
Did you have any? Obviously, there are very few Jews. I don't think there are any Jews in Lebanon today. Did you know anything about Jews, about Israel growing up?
So growing up, that's what they taught in schools in Lebanon, that, you know, Israel is the enemy of Lebanon. You know, you should not talk to Israelis. You should not talk to Jews. You know, things like that. But personally, I was disconnected from politics all my life. You know, just recently, over the past, I would say, 7-8 years, I started following politics. I'm all of 23 years old. So this is the vibe that I grew up around. My parents were not necessarily, you know, around that vibe. They didn't believe that in all the things that those people said, you know, anti-Semitism and things like that. But there was no, I would say I grew up around a non-religious home, technically a non-religious home. So I had spiritual emptiness growing up, and my parents didn't have a nice relationship. They've never ever had a happy, healthy relationship. They're now separated. That's why my dad is in Lebanon, because he refuses to give her a divorce, and there's lots of issues related to that. So that's why he's there. My mom lives in Texas with my younger brother. So growing up, I never clicked with people. I didn't feel like I fit within the Lebanese culture. I didn't feel like the way I take life, my lifestyle, the way I approach people, the way I talk to people is just very different. So I suffered a lot with communicating with people, just being able to resonate on a similar intellectual level. And around junior year of high school, I started realizing, oh my gosh, college is approaching, and I'm in a country that provides no opportunities for anybody. And I have no future here. So I started begging my dad, because he was a U.S. citizen. I said, please go to America, establish something there so that me and my mom and my brother could go, and I could go to college and I could study something that I like. I was interested in aerospace engineering and astronomy and computer programming. So this is who I am. I've always been a nerd. And after a while of begging, my dad agreed, and he flew to America early 2014. And he started the process of getting us visas to come to America. Around mid junior year, which is early to mid 2014, some people came to school and started talking about, you know, religions, world religions. We had a class in history about it. And
was a school in Lebanon, right?
Yes, that was the high school.
Now, confirm with me, did you live, according to the Long Island, to the Five Town Jewish Times, did you live in a Palestinian refugee camp, Burj El Shamali?
No. It's called Burj Shamali, which means the North Tower. It's a town, but it's not a refugee camp. People in Lebanon, just so you know, there's a lot of racism against Palestinians in Lebanon. In Israel, you don't find racism against Palestinians, but in Lebanon, there is racism. So we were distant from any Palestinians.
You were near the refugee camp, but you weren't in it.
I was not near. So it was in a city that was close to the town where I lived, but I've never affiliated with Palestinians. I'm not Palestinian. I'm not. So I don't even, I've never had Palestinian friends ever.
Okay.
So
go back. So you're 2014 and what happens?
So 2014, mid-year of high school, people came to my school and we had a beautiful conference about, you know, religions, world religions. They said Islam, Christianity, Judaism, Buddhism, et cetera, whatever it is. And I was like, screw it. Let me explore religions. I have spiritual emptiness. I've never felt like I belong in the religion of Islam, which I grew up around. There were even Christians living close to me. I had Christian friends, Christian and Muslim friends in the city where I lived. So I said, I'm going to start exploring religions. So I started, I looked at Islam a little bit. I didn't like it. It's not for me. I didn't feel any connection. It just didn't click into my heart. Not for me, not the word of God. If there is a God, this is not the word of God. And then I started.
Were you required to go to mosque or you to pray?
No. I did. I've never stepped into a mosque.
In Lebanon, you never stepped into a mosque?
I've never stepped into a mosque. I was actually mocked by my friends, and I was the joke of the group of my friends that, oh, who is this guy? He doesn't go to mosques. He doesn't do this. He doesn't do that. You know, I never felt like I wanted to do it ever. It's not for me.
But your father, father did celebrate some of the Muslim holiday.
Yes.
He didn't require you to go to mosque?
So it didn't require me to go to mosque. They did celebrate holidays. There was the month of Ramadan where they fasted. Even they wanted me to fast, but I didn't want to. I'm like, leave me alone. I don't want to fast. I don't want to starve myself for 30 days. It's not for me, right? But the pressure you feel in a community is really harsh, right? So if I had been forced to fast a few times, but that was about it. I even was forced by my dad. He said, come here. I want to teach you prayers because, you know, all your friends pray and things like that. I'm like, I don't want it. It's not for me. And even he used to mock me. He used to tell my mom, "You're my wife, and you're bringing shame to me. You don't pray. You don't put a hijab on." My mom never ever believed in fundamentally, never ever believed in Islam.
Okay, right? So at some point you came to the United States. What year was that?
I want to tell my story. Before I came to the United States, my story started in Lebanon when I started exploring religions. I explored Islam a little bit. Not for me, not the word of God. I explored Christianity. And then I got to explore Judaism. The first thing I did was I Googled Jewish Bible. And I got an app called Torah Pocket. It's Torah, Parashot. I downloaded it and I started reading it. And it just clicked. It clicked. It felt like it's for me. Bereshit and Exodus and all of this, it felt right. The story of Adam and Chava and Moshe Rabbeinu and Yosef and Yaakov Avinu and Abraham Avinu, it just felt right. It felt deep into my heart. So I said, you know what? This is beautiful. I like it. So I started Googling Jewish prayers. I started Googling Jewish laws. I downloaded a PDF Gemara that I started reading. you know what? This is beautiful. Rabbis arguing with each other to reach the truth, to reach, it's something really right. This is how you reach truth. This is how you know that this is the word of God. When you use your intellect, it's not through your heart or through your emotions or through anything. The Torah says you don't have to believe. The Torah says you have to know. And that really clicked in me. And I started looking up Jewish prayers. I downloaded tefillot, PDFs. I said, oh my gosh, this is beautiful. You wake up in the morning and you thank Hashem and you wash your hands and you do this and you do that. This is amazing to me. This is you, when you download some, sorry, when you pray and with your prayers, you feel not just like you're speaking to God, but you're actually elevating everything around you. Every word that you say, every Hebrew letter that you say. I wasn't praying in Hebrew at first because I didn't know how to speak Hebrew, but I was praying in English. So I started teaching myself Hebrew. I started
in
I
Lebanon.
Downloaded
in
it.
Lebanon, you were teaching
yourself. In Lebanon, I started teaching myself Hebrew.
And what did your parents say? What did your parents say to that?
At this point, it was all hidden. No one noticed anything. Okay. I started learning Hebrew letters. I started teaching myself how to read, how to put letters together, like the word Aleph and then Bet next to it. So Ava. You say my Ava, my father. It was beautiful. So I started reading Hebrew. I started reading actual prayers and actual text. I was not still a little sloppy, but I tried my best. I've always been trying my best.
So what happened? So here you go. Then, so you end up coming to. You started coming to the United States at some point.
This is before me coming to the United States. So here's me exploring this new religion, falling in love with it, feeling connected, feeling that finally I have some spirituality. So I made my own kippah. I literally made my own kippah from cardboard and cloth and threads that my grandma used to. I sewed it. I made it by myself, and I started putting it on in the morning and praying and coming. And later, I mean, it was always hard for me to pray in the morning because you have to wake up and go to school and then come back. But around Mincha time, that was easier for me.
Why do you have to make a kippah? Couldn't you use a Muslim? The Muslim prayer caps are very similar.
No. I wanted to make my. I didn't want to use anything that they do. I don't affiliate with them. I don't feel comfortable. I don't fit. So I made my own kippah. It was small, and I they took it away from me at some point. But my mom started.
Who took it away from you?
My mom.
Oh, your mother. Okay.
My mom took it away from me at some point, and I'll get to that part of the story. So. My mom started noticing, what are you doing? I said, Mom, I'm learning Hebrew. She's like, oh my gosh, no, this is dangerous. This is, you're going to get us in trouble. My mom was not against Israel or anything, but she was just scared knowing, you know, that we live in a community that has Muslims and there's Christians around us who are also, you know, not into dealing with Israel. So my mom got scared. She said, I don't want to go to jail. She said, I want to travel and I want to go with you to America and I want to have a, but I don't want to go to jail. So don't get me in trouble. But I didn't stop. I don't care. I kept praying and I kept learning and I started coming out to people, as I want to become Jewish. You know, I don't believe in your religion. I even started having debates with people about why Judaism is the word of God, why Eretz Yisrael belongs to Am Yisrael, why Hashem said, you know, this should happen. I started coming out of the box and telling people, I have a Jewish soul, and I consider myself Jewish, and I want to be Jewish. People then started spitting on me in the street. I used to walk on the street and be spit on. People started texting me on WhatsApp from random numbers, giving me death threats, saying, if you don't stop this, we're going to come to your house and we're going to kill you. One guy actually texted me, said, oh my God, if you don't stop, we're going to hack your bank account. And I said to myself, I don't even have a bank account. Like, what are you talking about?
But in interest of brevity, I'm just trying to move this story along. So you decided that you like Judaism while you were still in Lebanon. What year did you, how many years ago did you come to the United States?
This was a year and a half, about a year and a half before I came to the United States. And my dad figured out what was going on. My mom told my dad, you know, your son is doing this and people are starting to notice and they're sending him death threats. He said, throw him out of the house for 2 days, let him sleep on the stairs so that he learns to stop to do this. Because if he doesn't, I'm not bringing him to America. And he threatened me. He said, if you do not stop what you're doing, you're bringing shame to me and shame to your uncles and shame to everybody and shame to the community. You need to stop. Otherwise, I'm not bringing you here. You're never going to have a future in America. So I laid low. I stopped. I laid low a little bit. I kept reading by myself online. I kept teaching myself Hebrew, learning Hebrew words. So and what, then time passed, so what and I graduated from...
You graduated in high school in Lebanon.
The year 2015. And those pictures that you saw online of me, those people with me in the picture, those were not my family. These were not family members. Those were people from the district where my high school was located, and they came to give me an award because I had a really high grade. I graduated valedictorian in Lebanon from my high school, and I had the highest grade in the district and one of the highest grades in the country.
So here you are, you're coming to the United States, and what happens then?
First week when I come to the U.S., you know, finally I'm here in a country that accepts freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of everything.
And so, obviously you learned English in Lebanon, so you were able to...
Yes. My English is pretty well. I speak really good English and I write really good English. So I get to the United States first week in Houston around the Westheimer Road area, close to the Galleria Mall. So I started Googling synagogues in my area. I want to connect with Jews. I connect with the community. I want to go pray with them. I want to go get to convert. I want to be Jewish. I couldn't wait just to do this, just to come to America to do this and to go to college. At that point,
did you reach out to any rabbis to try to help you convert? Did you try that?
So not rabbis, because I don't know anybody. So not individuals, but I reached out to a shul in Houston, a reform shul. I called them. They didn't three times. They didn't respond. So I sent them an email. I still have that email on me. I'll send you off the air. I'll send you a screenshot of that email. I said, hi, I'm here and I want to convert to Judaism. Can you please help me? No one responded. I called again and again and again. And then someone responded and said, we'll send you the details of an event to come meet with our rabbi here so that you could talk to him. And then they never sent me anything. And I kept calling them and I kept begging them and begging and asking. They just ghosted me. So I said, you know what? I'm being rejected because of my background. I'm being rejected because I came from Lebanon. What am I going to do to belong? If I'm not being accepted, what am I going to do? I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm going to practice what I'm practicing, what I believe in.
So
I'm going to say I'm Jewish.
So the Reformed Jewish congregation did not really respond to you. So at some point you said, okay, I'm not getting help from the Reformed Jewish congregation. I'm going to tell people I'm Jewish. What point was that?
This was around November 2015. I said, I'm tired. I can't, you know, I feel like, you know, it's a mix of emotions that I'm being rejected. Right. And if I'm being rejected, I'm never going to get accepted. And I didn't know any better. I really did not know any better.
Okay. So here you are. So you didn't know any better. So you started telling people you were Jewish. Did you start going to shuls? Did you start going to events?
I didn't start going to shuls because the shul was a little far and I didn't own a car and my dad was working all day and my mom didn't have a car. But what I did was I took the metro bus. I used to take the metro bus for two things. Number one, I used to take it from Westheimer and Dunville to Westheimer and Fondren, then walk for 45 minutes to go eat by Saba's restaurant in Houston, which was a kosher restaurant because there was a lot of Jews and I wanted to eat kosher. I couldn't always do it. But whenever I had money on me, and I didn't get all the financial support from my parents, I saved money to go take the bus and go eat by Saba's, which is pretty expensive. Kosher food is always
expensive. So where'd you get the money from?
Just from scholarships.
Scholarships, okay.
So I was in the honors program by Lone Star College North Harris. So I got a really good scholarship and some grants from the government. I became a U.S. citizen November, around late November, I became a U.S. citizen.
So you became a U.S. citizen. And at what point did you start hanging out more with the Jewish community?
So I started taking the bus to the Galleria Mall because there were lots of Israeli workers in the Galleria Mall. I used to just go schmooze around with them like, oh my gosh, finally, Jews, Israelis, I love Israel. You know, finally, I'm belonging. I'm meeting people that I'm clicking with them. there was this girl named Anita. She used to work by one of the kiosks in the Galleria. I told her, oh my gosh, Mashiach will come and we will rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. She tried to give me a hug, but I mean, I don't touch, you know, I just didn't feel comfortable. She tried to give me a hug. She said, you're amazing. You know, come here. Well, they tried to sell me some stuff, of course, but I mean, I wasn't interested in buying. I really just went to the Galleria to schmooze around with Israeli workers. These are the people I longed to speak with. So I started asking about Israel.
So you started doing that. So now this is about 2015, 2016, you're saying?
2016.
So now let's just move up a little bit more. So at some point you met the Chabad rabbi in Texas?
Yes. So I kept doing what I'm doing, and we moved from Houston to Katy, and then in Katy I moved to Lone Star College, Saif Air, where I kept identifying, you know, I'm Jewish. I'm Jewish. This is who I am. This is who I want to be. I even at some point tried starting a Jewish club in Lone Star College, Saif Air, but there were just no Jewish students there.
So at some point you made contact with Rabbi Yossi Lazaron.
Yes.
Who we did try contact for tonight's broadcast, but we were unable to get a hold of him. But go ahead. Yes.
So
he's the Chabad rabbi. Yes, go ahead.
Yes. So around the time, a semester before I graduated from Lone Star College, I started applying to multiple colleges, and I got accepted to really some high ranking colleges. But Texas A&M University gave me a good scholarship, so I accepted Texas A&M University, and then I transferred there. And then during the new student conference at Texas A&M University, I went to the Hillel House. Because I Googled, I said, you know, it's Texas A&M, it's a big university, so there must be a lot of Jewish students there. There must be a Jewish community. So I went to the Hillel House, and in the Hillel House, they asked me, oh, you're Jewish? I said, you know what? Yes, I am. If I tell them I'm not, I'm going to be thrown out. I was scared. I was scared of being thrown out of that place. I wanted to make Jewish friends, and I wanted to pray Jewish, and I wanted to eat kosher food. And then when the semester started, I went again. And then I got to know the Chabad house. A friend of mine at this point, I was telling them I'm Jewish, and they were asking me details about family. So I said, you know what? If I tell them the truth, they're not going to accept me. No one's going to like me. So let me just tell them I'm Jewish, and this is my name, and this is my mom's name, and this is my grandma's name. And then when I went to the Chabad house, first time I met Rabbi Yossi, he said, is your mom Jewish? And I thought to myself quickly, I said, if I tell him no, I'm not going to be allowed to pray here. I'm not going to be allowed to come here. I didn't know any better. They're the sweetest people. The Chabad house in Texas A&M, they're the sweetest people on earth. I didn't know that.
So you told them that you were Jewish?
I told them that I was Jewish. And I started going there, and I started praying, and I got to know one of the dearest friends to my heart. He's a physicist. He worked at Los Alamos. He's a genius. Very big tzaddik, very big, very chashuv person. I got to know him, and I told him I'm Jewish. And every time he saw me, Elia, you want to learn Gemara? You want to learn Gemara? So I said, yes, I want to learn with you. So I started learning, and I started making more and more friends. And finally, I'm living the life that I wanted. I'm praying. I'm going to shul. I'm praying. I wasn't always praying because, of course, there's college. And, of course, you know, still those mixed emotions of, yes, I consider myself Jewish.
So they thought you were Jewish, and they were accepting of you because you said you were Jewish.
Yes. But at that point, when I saw that they were accepting, you know, even to other people, I started seeing other people who are not Jewish who were coming in. And one of my closest friends, he's now converting. They accepted him, and they actually pushed him towards conversion. I said, "What did I do to myself?" But you know what? I was being tortured from the inside that I wasn't telling the truth. But I wanted to tell the truth, but I was afraid of losing Rabbi. I was afraid of losing my friends, the dearest friends to my heart, the people who gave me support, the people who literally just took me as a brother to them.
So you kept going and saying you're Jewish. At some point, you contacted the Jewish dating site, saw you at Sinai, correct?
Before that, because I don't want to skip details, because every detail in my story counts.
No, so, but an interest in brevity, because we're going to break and we're going to take some phone calls too. So
I kept going and I kept trying to become more religious. It was a struggle. I tried to keep Shabbat. In Lebanon, I used to try to keep Shabbat. I used to sometimes turn off my phone. And when I got to Texas A&M, I used to go to the Shabbat meals at both the Hillel house and the Chabad house, and they all treated me well. The rabbi of the Chabad house in that Texas A&M University is one of the sweetest people I've ever met in my life. And he has a good heart. And it pains me that I lied to him. It pains me, but he has a good heart. And no one should point fingers at him. No one. Point fingers at me. But while you point fingers at me, understand where my pain is coming from. So I started going there, and I never ever wanted to date a non-Jewish girl. I wanted to date Jewish. So I started, you know, I dated a girl from Texas A&M University who was Jewish. Didn't work out. And then when Corona happened, I dated another girl online from Canada. Didn't work out. And I kept my initial lie kept spiraling. So every time I had to say something new, I had to come up with something. I don't want to lose my friends. Those are the people who make me who I want to be. I don't want to lose them. So at some point, the dear friend of mine that I told you about, the physicist, he said, "Why don't you try Sayu at Sinai?" I said, which is the dating website that I used where I met the girl. So,
we're not going to mention her name because we're going to protect the
family. I'm not going to mention her name.
I just want to say the whole thing is a sad situation. We feel bad for the family. We're going to get to that in just a moment. So you were on Soyu for Sinai and you met this young lady.
And I just want to tell her, if I'm referring to her as the girl right now, and if she hears me, I'm only saying that because I can't say your name, but I still want to say your name and I still want to call you Habibti. And I will get to that at some point. But I met a few girls before her. We went on Zoom calls. We went on, you know, online Zoom dates, but just didn't work out.
So then December comes. Okay.
December comes. My mom and my dad are separated. My dad is in Lebanon. He doesn't speak to me. He disowned me, disowned my mom, disowned my brother. And my mom now has a boyfriend. So I have to leave the dorm because of winter break. And I call my mom and I say, "Take me to your house. I need to stay there for a few weeks, two, 3 weeks, because the semester ended." She tells me, "No, you're not allowed to come to my house. There, I have a boyfriend, and you're going to say something wrong in front of him, and it's going to throw him off, and you're going to ruin my life just like your father ruined my life. So no." So she kicked me out of her house, and I went to her friend's house. And as I went to her friend's house, I lived the worst days of my life. I was literally cleaning his toilet because he said, "If you don't clean in my house, I'm going to kick you out."
Okay, so.
And then I go back to my mom after he kicked me out. I had no other choice. And then I matched with her. And then I started talking to her. And
no, I see it's hard for you to talk about it. So what we're going to do right now, and we're looking at, and we're going to get to it in just a little bit. We're speaking to Elia Hawila, who was born Muslim. When he came to the United States.
I'm not Muslim.
No, but you were born into a Muslim family. You were.
Yes.
You know, and you were of the Muslim religion. So now you want to be part of the Jewish religion. We'll talk about how you dated and married a young Syrian Jewish girl, and then they discovered that you weren't Jewish and what that's all about. When we come back, we continue our conversation, and we will take some of your phone calls. We're going to be right back. Don't go away. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Talkline Network.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Talkline Radio and TV with Zeb Brenner is just phenomenal. Everybody concerned about the Jewish community should listen and watch. He has the best guests. He asks the most interesting questions. He's always so well prepared. It's talk radio and television from a Jewish point of view at its very best.
To advertise on the Talkline Network and Talkline's email and social media blasts reaching over 70,000 people, please call 212-769-1925, extension 100. That's 212-769-1925, extension 100. Or email info@talklinenetwork.com.
You're listening to Talk Line with Zev Brenner, America's premier Jewish broadcast on the air since 1981.
And now, here's your host.
Okay, we are back. Our guest is Eliyah Hawila. He married a Jewish girl. We'll talk about that in just a moment. He's from Lebanon, grew up in a Muslim family, and he was vetted by the FBI and by the New York Police Department. We heard from Deputy Inspector Richie Taylor before that he's not involved in any of the groups in Lebanon, the terrorist groups, but he's here in the United States, and he's talking his emotional story, how he wants to be Jewish, and he told people he was Jewish even though he wasn't. So let me go back to you, Elias. So you started going on the date site, saw you at Sinai, and at what point, you're talking, was it over the summer that you met this young lady that you ended up marrying?
No, we matched January 3rd and then started talking January 5th on phones. We had our first phone call at night, and she started asking me questions about myself. And, you know, I said, you know, if I'm ever going to have any shot with her, her profile, when I saw her profile on the dating website, I said, you know, this is the one. Everything about her is right. She even speaks Arabic. She speaks fluent Arabic. So me and her would resonate on a similar level. And every word I wrote in my dating profile about what type of girl I'm looking for, she fit in that category. So I said, this is the one. I'm not gonna waste it on myself.
Okay, so you went out with her, and then a short period
before
of time.
we started talking. I felt a deep connection with her even on the phone before I went to see her. Now, we matched January 5th. I was forced to live by my mom, and it was a horrible time before the semester started. So me and her started talking. She really liked me, and I really liked her.
Because you were in Texas, and she was in Brooklyn.
Yes, I was in Texas, and she was in Brooklyn. So we started talking, and I felt a really deep connection to her. A really deep, deep, deep connection, and I still feel it. So the semester starts, and I went back to College Station, the university, to my dorm. And first thing I did, first few days, I got a ticket to fly to New York to come see her. So I flew to New York January. I think it was January 21st or 20th. I don't remember clearly, but I think it was January 20th, and then I met her in person for the first time, January 21st. And we even connected at a deeper, deeper level when we met in person. And then we went on our first date. Remember, it was a very, very, very beautiful date. We went to... I think it was Izzy's. We went to Izzy's barbecue in Crown Heights, and then after that we went to the Museum of Natural History. And then after the Museum of Natural History, we went to the Empire State Building, where we took a lot of pictures together. I still look at them. And then we went to Talia's Steakhouse, and then we went back up. We dropped her off, the Uber dropped her off in Williamsburg, because she had a shift in Williamsburg that night. And then I went to the Airbnb where I was staying. And then we went on another date to Piscata. And then we took walks together. We met. We just clicked. And then I met the son of her rabbi. He is also a rabbi. And his wife, the Rebbetzin. And they were very sweet. The sweetest people in the world. And them too, no one should ever point fingers at them. Point your fingers at me. But while you point your fingers at me, understand my pain. Understand where it's coming from. And I met them, and I told them the same exact lies that I had told to my friends and to my rabbi in Texas. The same exact lies. Because
what did
I knew
you say? What did you say? You were Sephardic? I said
I was Sephardic, but my grandma from my mom's side is Ashkenazi. That's what I told them.
And you also said you worked for the NSA?
I did say at some point, but I will explain why. I will explain the story. So one more reason, and I should say that, and this, the whole world should hear about this, that forced me to lie more and more in Brooklyn to them and to the girl, is that the Syrian community does not accept converts. They don't. And if I were to convert, if I were to tell them I'm not Jewish and I want to convert, I would lose her, and I would lose belonging to a community that just felt like home. The Flatbush community, the Flatbush Syrian community, felt like home. The way I spoke to people, the way I clicked with people, I didn't want to lose it. And most importantly, I didn't want to lose her. So I lied to them. But you know what? When I told you I love Torah, when I told you I want to study, when I told you I'm becoming religious, and when I told you I want to pray, I wasn't lying. And I still don't want to be taken away from Torah. I still don't want to be taken away from Hashem. I still don't want to be taken away from this. I suffered a lot. I suffered a lot ever. I've been subject to death threats in Lebanon.
So
I don't want to lose that.
Okay, so at some point we're going to get to it, that you want to convert and you're looking to find rabbis to convert.
I went back to Texas, and then she came over and visited me for Purim in Texas. And then she visited me again for Pesach. And on Pesach, all of this, and I'm still feeling a deep connection to this girl, and I'm getting attached to her day after day, and I'm falling in love with her more and more and more. She comes to Texas, and we went gun shooting together. And in Texas, when you go gun shooting, it's easy to go gun shooting. Texas is literally the state of guns. It's one of the most beautiful places for freedoms ever. Let me put that straight, besides the point. So we went gun shooting together, and we had to show ID. So I pulled out my ID, which was not a Texas ID, but it was a passport card. When you get your citizenship, you can not just get the passport, you can also apply for a passport card. And she saw my legal name on the passport card, which was not Aliyah. And then after the gun shooting session at night, she confronted me about it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. Like in that, my heart almost stopped. I said, she saw it. I'm done. She's going to leave me. I'm going to lose her. She's the love of my life, and I'm going to lose her. So I had to make something up. I said, you know what? This is an NSA ID, and it's for a mission. And I work for the NSA.
And what?
That's literally the whole story about the NSA.
And what did it say? Ali Hassan on the card?
Yes.
Okay. So she bought it at that point in time, and things progressed where you had the VART, the engagement, in August 10th of this year.
Things progressed. I finished the semester at Texas A&M, and I moved to Brooklyn. And I think it was May 25th when I moved to Brooklyn. And then within a week, I found a job. And I met really sweet families. There's a family that I know, they're listening to me right now. They hosted me for every single Shabbat meal. And I love you guys so much. One of them, like one of the guys from this family, is a friend who recently got married. I want him to forgive me for lying. I lied to them. I had to lie to everybody. I want him to forgive me, and I want him to know that he's still a dear friend to my heart. This family is still a dear family to my heart. I love you guys, all of you. And there's another family as well. He has a brother in Houston who's a rabbi. I also love all of you guys. You're all dear to my heart.
So I know that you ate, and people called me that you ate in their homes, and obviously you got around and you got married. What was it, a few weeks ago? Correct.
We got engaged.
In August,
we proposed. I proposed on a helicopter. We went on a beautiful helicopter ride, and then we had a beautiful engagement party. And I just want her to know that. I want everybody to know that every word I said to her in that video that went viral, every word I said in the engagement party, about how she made me feel like it was a new life, how happy I was, every word, every beautiful word I said about her, that she has the best midot, she's a holy girl, all of these, I mean them. They came from the bottom of my heart.
But at the same time, it pained me that I was lying about myself.
So let me ask you a question. So you loved her. You got married. And I'm gonna get to the other question. How did they discover that you weren't Jewish? At what point after the marriage?
So a week after the wedding, my wife's father took my last name. My wife's father and my wife's brother took my last name, and they started Googling people with this last name, on just doing Google searches and looking up people on Facebook, until they got to my father, who lives in Lebanon, and they contacted him, and they found my mom's profile, Facebook profile, and things started unfolding from there. So they went crazy. I wanted to cover things up. So I started lying even more and more. I felt, oh my gosh, they're taking her away from me. She's the love of my life. I'm finally living a Jewish life and having a Jewish home and building a Jewish family. And I don't want that to be taken away from me. I love this girl. I literally would give my life to this girl. That's how much I love her. That's how much I love her.
And by the way, the
I spoke to her. I started making things up.
What kind of things did you make up?
So her father.
What did you say to the father when they confront you and say, "Hey, you're not."
The father did not confront me. The father started going to people high in the community, rich people in the community, and telling them this is what's happening. And rumors started spreading, and stuff started going on WhatsApp pictures. There's this. I remember when they separated her away from me. She was praying Shacharit in the morning by her apartment. I was sleeping and she was praying, and I heard bad, like really, really strong knocks on the door. And her father was screaming. And she got really scared. So I picked up my bag and left for a few hours. I was by the Colbert Field Park on Avenue L in East 17th, sitting there for a few hours, and she was texting me and telling me that she misses me and that she doesn't care what the world, what the whole world has to say. And she really loves me. And I hope she still loves me, and I want her to forgive me. But
so let me get to that.
I was sitting in the once just okay. Please. I was sitting in the park, and then I came back home, and then when I came back home, she was with the Rebbetzin, who told her that we can't let you stay with him anymore until he brings proof of Jewishness, proof of Yichus, Beruah HaYahadut. So they took her away from me. She left. And they had told her father that she left. And I was struggling for a week, just trying to just make up something, anything, anything. Anything for me to try to convince them that I'm Jewish, because I don't want to lose this. I don't want to lose the life that I always wanted. And I'm stuck. This is the love of my life that I'm losing. And I want to have a family, and I want to have a Jewish life, and I want to go study in the yeshiva in Ateret. And I had the best time studying in Ateret in the summer. I'm studying Torah, and I'm keeping Shabbat. And now I know I'm not allowed to keep Shabbat. But This is the life that I always wanted, and I don't want to lose it. So I just started making up stuff, making up names, and making up things, and making up and saying stories. So things happened, and it got really intense. And I started seeing posts of me on Instagram and things that went viral. And
you're talking about the fact they said you were Hezbollah terrorist or you were a
terrorist. I'm not.
I know you're not, but this is what appeared on some of the posts. That's why the FBI was called.
They were accusing
me. And the NYPD was called.
That's what I know. When the NYPD came, they told me your father-in-law called us and said that you were a terrorist, so we had to come and investigate. That's what they told me. And like, this is... what Yeshiva World did, I'm going to say it, is unethical. Because if you want to reach Emmet, and I know I lied, and now I can't lie anymore, because if I lie anymore, I'm going to die. It's going to kill me from the inside. And I feel so much comfort that I'm telling the truth, finally. But what Yeshiva World did is unethical. That they went and not just defamed my name, but they defamed her name. And the NYPD themselves, they said, you know what? He said, you're a harmless kid. And if you want to file a harassment report, harassment defamation report against your father-in-law and against Yeshiva World, let us know. But you know what? I'm going to tell you something. If I believe that I have a Jewish soul, and I believe that I want to convert, and I believe that I want to live a Jewish life, I can never ever report any other Jew to the authorities. I can just hope that one day they will do tshuva and stop putting inflammatory titles and stop ruining people's lives and stop defaming their names.
You should know that I did speak to your father-in-law, who told me that he's nothing against Muslims and he's nothing against you personally. So he just wanted me to convey that to you. But let me ask you. Yeah, go ahead.
He's telling you he has nothing against Muslims because he thinks I am Muslim. I am not Muslim. I don't affiliate with that religion. I have a Jewish soul.
So let me ask you this question. We're going to get to some phone calls in just a few moments. So let me ask you this. Did you think that you can get away with saying you're Jewish when you weren't? Did you really believe you can pull that off long term?
All I was thinking about is I don't want to lose the love of my life, and I don't want to lose what I'm living. I was living it moment by moment. Around the wedding time, and my friend was speaking to me yesterday before Shabbat, he said, Elia, I noticed you were getting very nervous and you started vaping CBD again before the wedding. Now I understand why. All I was thinking about is I am going to fight till the end because I don't want to lose her. I don't want to lose this life.
I know you don't want to lose her. But do you know that her caused pain?
I know. And I will beg forgiveness to the pain I caused. I will beg forgiveness for the rest of my life. To her specifically.
Because
and I want her to I want to beg her to forgive me, and I want to beg her to give me a second chance.
But here's the problem. As you said earlier in the show, you know the Syrian Jewish community is very strict. It goes back 70 years. They have an edict where under no circumstances will they take a convert for marriage in the community. So even if you were to be converted tomorrow, the Syrian Jewish community does not accept converts in this context. You are aware of that?
I am.
So that changes, because that changes the picture, because you like to get back together, but it seems to be...
Right now, Before I even get the right to say that I want to get back together, all I want to do, because I have no right to go beg her, tell her, come be back with me now. I first want to do the conversion, but I want to also remind her that I love her. And I want to remind her of all the beautiful moments we had with each other and all the emotions that we shared. They were true. When I took care of her and she took care of me. When I told her I would take a bullet for you, and she told me, I love you so much, I got attached to you, I don't know what you did to me. Those were true feelings. But besides the point, I want to focus right now on a few things. The most important thing is getting converted. I am begging anybody who can give me a connection to any rabbi that would convert me, and I would prefer to get converted in Israel, because there's nothing holier than to get converted in Israel. I'm a Lebanese boy who grew up around a Muslim community in South Lebanon, and I'm coming out and saying, I support Israel. I would literally put myself on the front lines to defend Israel with my life. And I want to live a Jewish life, and I have a Jewish soul, and I want to daven, and I want to learn Torah, and become a Talmid Chacham, and keep Shabbat, and keep kosher, and keep all the Chagim, and elevate everything around me with brachot. I don't want to eat one bite of unkosher food. I want to say a bracha to everything that I do. This is the life I want. This is the life I always wanted.
There you have it. But now, before we break, we are going to break. But at the same time, you realize by not only did you lie to yourself, but you lied to this young lady. And now the people that you ate by is one thing, but her life has been changed. And listen, it's very traumatic. I feel bad. I understand your story, but I feel bad for her and her family too, because they thought they were marrying a Jewish individual. She thought she was marrying a Jewish man, and she wasn't. So you can imagine, you know, the shock to her and the family. You can empathize with that.
I understand the pain, and I'm really sorry from the bottom of my heart. I know the word sorry is not good. Actions count more than words. And I beg her, and I beg her family to forgive me. And I want her father to know, I never meant to harm to your daughter. I really, truly loved your daughter from the bottom of my heart. And I still love her. And I still think of her as the best girl in the world.
You brought
the best girl.
We're speaking to Elia, and he's here with us right now. His original name was Ali Hassan in Lebanon, but right now he's Elia Hawila. And as you heard, he grew up in a Muslim family. He married a Jewish girl, but discovered he wasn't Jewish, and we're looking at the aftermath of that. When we come back right after these messages.
Hi, this is David Gabay, and you're listening to The Zev Brenner Show.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Are you interested in hosting your own radio show and podcast, or perhaps a TV program? TalkLine Network can help you get on the air from 1 hour weekly to 24 hours a day. Ideal for ethnic, foreign language, medical, business, and religious broadcasting. We also have full-time radio stations for lease, as well as FM HD channels. For more information, please call 212-769-1925. That's 212-769-1925. Or email zevbrenner@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening.
For continuous Jewish programs, talklinenetwork.com or our 24-hour-a-day listen line at 641-741-0389. For past shows, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, YouTube, Instagram, and all major podcast platforms, or jewishpodcast.org. Thanks for listening to the talklinenetwork.com.
Talkline Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.